Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls, another mini-sode.
See how good he is at this?
See that, Lou? Lou didn't want to take point on the mini-sode. Scared. Scared, Lou. Why are you scared? Don't be scared.
Your voice is so deep and soothing. And
yeah.
Professional.
My voice is bullshit, Lou. It's bullshit.
I am now... I gotta say, now we got Rashid on the podcast, so now I am the only guy who with the high-pitched white guy voice, and everybody else has like these like deep, nice, soothing tones. And
I always say you have a high-pitched voice.
Well, you're not the only guy today.
All right, so we're back with James Boyle, yeah. And Chris, my cousin.
Cousin Chris.
So,
it's not a radio show. Cousin Chris!
Cousin Chris in the morning!
Waka waka.
There it is. Maybe you are. That's fine.
The Cousin Chris Morning Show. WTTT. Man, I'm having a rough day, guys. David Bowie died.
He did.
That just really sucks. It really sucks.
Out of nowhere, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, he just put out the new album, Black Star, and listening to it is so much worse. Like, if you listen to the lyrics, it's so much worse knowing that he, like, just died. I don't know, have you guys heard that yet?
I haven't.
No.
I did hear that about it, though.
Yeah.
That it's like a goodbye kind of thing, and he... knew he was going
I'm sure
out.
He did.
Yeah.
So that's something they said in the news report. It was like a battle with cancer.
Quiet.
Yeah.
With cancer. That's the headline that I heard.
Which, right. Because
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. You have nobody heard anything about him being sick.
And that's how it was with Lemmy too.
Yep.
Who
same thing.
Just passed away. You know, if you have cancer, usually you know you have it for some time. Sometimes it's not the case, but. In this case, I think, yeah, maybe he...
Well, they were saying that it was an 18-month battle, so really not that long, cancer-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's a big range of it, and, you know, so I guess maybe a lot of that did get into the material. Album-wise, it's not, you know, it's not the best David Bowie album, I mean... Not to be disrespectful or anything, but, you know, there is a couple of really good tracks on there. But, yeah, lyrically it's a little bit rough to listen to. So yeah, that sucks. And I think that a lot of these really great musicians are passing away. Like I said, we had Lemmy pass away just a couple days ago. And now David Bowie. And, you know... These guys were, and of course, not to say just guys, but, and females too, kind of from the older school of sort of like big, big money backed rock and roll bands had just reached this iconic status, I think, based on their music and based on their personalities. And what bothers me is the fact that I don't see who's there to replace them. I mean, that's not to say that there's not good bands and good musicians coming out with good music. I'm just not... who would be the next David Bowie?
I can't even begin
Sorry to cut you off, Chris, but you wonder if it's even possible in today's climate with the way music is distributed. People aren't really making money off of their music anymore. It's all about the tours and...
Right.
Spotify and
that's it's a good point. There, I think the thing that created a character like David Bowie and like a band like Motorhead and all the bands that are now the members of are pushing their 50s, 60s, or even 70s was the fact that there was big money to be made in the record companies. And for some artists, that's still true today. I mean, there's still Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, and
it's not rock, really, though.
Yeah, a lot of it's
pop true. Stars.
Yeah, yep. it's pop stars. It's not rock music
and rappers, really.
Rappers, yeah, but even as far as rap, I don't think I'm not the biggest fan of the genre. There is a lot of rap I like, but are today's rappers making the same impact that like mid to late 90s rappers did? I mean, what do you guys think?
Maybe not, because there's so many of them, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, like quantity over quality, I guess. And also, like you were saying before, those like Motorhead and Bowie and the Stones and even the Beatles, like, they were the first ones to do anything like that. Like, you get to now and it's almost like Simpsons did it.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Like, you might be a new band, but you're derivative of you're either the Beatles or the Stones. That's what, you know, people have played that game forever, where take any band and it goes back to either any
this
rock
the,
band.
Well, this is the postmodern era that we're
yeah
in.
Yeah, well, I think I both agree and disagree, because, well, maybe I don't. I don't know. The Beatles and Stones, like, yeah, it's hard to think of anyone more influential than either of those bands before those bands were around, and anyone who doesn't, in at least some way, draw from them.
Either one of them.
But not to say that they didn't have influence of their own.
A lot of it goes back to blues and jazz, too. There was a good documentary on, I think it was on VH1 Classic. It was the Metal Evolution one. They traced individual things back to, like, old blues players.
Oh, they ripped everyone. I mean, look at Zeppelin ripped all those blues guys off. I mean, that's everything they did was built off.
Well, before them, the Stones, and before them, Elvis.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Rock and roll comes from the blues, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I'm talking about, like, mainstream rock artist-wise, though.
Yeah.
You go back to, you know, there's that tree splits pretty early on, and you can't go back to the ground through anyone other than one of those couple bands.
That's true. And I think maybe that also is a sign of the times that, you know, like 50s and 60s was when the money really started pouring into, like, that's when recorded music was becoming most profitable. So,
and the only way you could do it was through a major label.
Right. Exactly. So today, I don't know, there are new styles to be discovered. There always will be. Whenever I think about, like, oh, everything's stagnant and repetitive, I remember that the classical period of music lasted something like 200 years. The Baroque period lasted like 300 or 400 years.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because that's how slowly that media moved at the time. There was, of course, no recorded music at all. Music was for church. The way we listen to music now as consumers didn't even make sense to them. They're like, no, music is for church or dancing
or the,
like,
opera.
Yeah. Like, there is no, there's no going home and spinning your favorite record or whatever, 'cause that didn't exist, but, that would be very foreign to them. So, I mean, I'm pretty confident that there's going to be great music in the future, but, you know, right now it's kind of hard to see that, because I don't even know if the next generation of music listeners has someone that they identify with. Maybe Lady Gaga, I think.
Maybe.
You ever seen Children of Men, the movie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remember the old guy when he's like listening to music and it's like just noise. It's just like unfathomable, like, just like siren sounds and like anything like that. I hear dubstep. That's what it reminds me of. The old man from Children of Men. Just like, this is what music sounds like now.
I love that movie. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's the guy that collects all the art.
Yeah.
Right.
He's like the archivist, I guess. He's mm-hmm. just got like everything, like every piece of what
right.
like the culture that used
Picasso
to,
painting,
yeah,
this and that.
That movie was very depressing.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, like, as any sort of like post-apocalyptic movie should be, obviously depressing, but that did it. That depressed me so well. That in The Road. I don't know if any of you guys
caught the Road. I read the book.
The Road was good.
That was harsh.
It was, yeah. I mean, it was a great movie as far as what it did. Which was making me want to die.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever saw the movie because I read the book and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It just, like, bummed me out.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not sitting through that bummer.
No.
I loved it. That's like right in my wheelhouse, that, you know, that just, that gray, bleak...
grinding out a day-to-day existence.
Yes. Yep. And I think that kind of... I think that was kind of this. I mean, for me at least, it was kind of the start of a kind of post-apocalyptic culture, like revival in the, you know, our time. I mean, you know, we had the Mad Max movies in the 80s, but I think after The Road was out, then I think that's when The Walking Dead, you know, Walking Dead on TV.
That blew up pretty good.
That blew up really big. I think, I mean, Tim, you still work at the store.
Yeah.
The comic book store, 30 North Main Street in Glassboro, New Jersey.
Plug.
I feel like maybe we're over the hump with The Walking Dead. I feel like...
people still come in for that book.
Really? Okay.
People come in just to buy that book. I don't think it's as big as maybe it was when the show started, but it's kind of hitting a resurgence. It's actually, as of, well, when this gets put up, I don't know, but the 150th issue either is about to or just came out.
Okay.
And it's an oversized, seems like an important issue, as all numbered issues that are 50 or 100 are.
Right.
But it seems like an important issue, and people have been calling for like 3 weeks now, like, hey, you gonna get any of them Walking Dead 150s? They're all old prospectors, yes.
Okay, yeah. All right, well.
Gangsters and prospectors. That's the only voices
yeah,
I do.
See? I stand corrected. I guess Walking Dead is as popular as ever.
The only customer
ask me again.
You get.
Yeah.
Ask me again next week. I'll tell you if they lied to me on the phone.
Yeah, if they actually picked up their books or not. Yeah, I saw an article recently. It was talking about how the new sort of post-apocalyptic media, like Hunger Games and like The Giver. I mean, I know The Giver is not really a new book. I know it's a movie now or something, but it was a book.
That was a book I read in like 7th grade.
Yeah.
And that's old.
I recently reread it a couple months ago. And was inspired actually, and started working on an art piece, a single illustration, just a personal piece, just in my free time. Inspired by The Giver, because I think it's a really great story.
That's cool.
Little side note.
No, so that's awesome. I'll ask you based on that, since you've read it really recently, and you know I heard it on tape like a very long time ago when I was a kid. This article I saw was saying that sort of like your George Orwell, 1984, and like Brave New Worlds and stuff like that were the demon of the post-apocalypse, or the you know, dystopian future was like big corporations and sort of like
state.
Capitalism gone rampant. Whereas Giver and Hunger Games and stuff that's more like young adult fiction that's very popular today sort of leans the other way, and it's more like the leftist sort of like, you know, government is the evil thing that's
right,
that's,
where the few have everything and you know everyone's
right
kind of stamped down in their wake.
And I feel like either way, I feel like in a dystopia, like if you're creating a dystopia and you want to make whatever world it want, you can just take the logical extreme of any ideology and say, well, look how this ends up, you know, like
no,
if you
right.
if you take the like the corporatist version, you're like, well, companies have all the power. You take the sort of socialist communism perspective, it's like, well, the government has all the power. In both cases, life sucks for everybody unless you're in, you know, that one small group.
Here's
so
dystopia. You're like, here, let everyone record an album and put it on the internet. And
that's
see,
right.
See what the music industry turns out.
See what
be.
Happens. See what happens when everyone can be on Bandcamp. Who's going to be David Bowie now?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man. I made myself sad.
I listened to a bunch of Bowie today, and then I watched... Did you watch The Venture Brothers? Because they actually wrote...
Oh.
They wrote him in as a character.
Yes, I have seen that one. And his henchman was
Iggy Pop.
Yeah, Iggy Pop and Klaus Nomi, which
correct.
Was insane.
Yes, and like Klaus had like vocal powers that would like hit people. Iggy Pop had like energy balls he shot for some reason.
Wow,
it was amazing.
I didn't know anyone knew who Klaus Nomi was. And
yes,
then I saw him.
they're actually punching him. He's like, what is this made out of, plastic? It's like hitting him and it's doing nothing. Go watch the Venture Brothers. It's like the season one or two finale, I forget. But David Bowie's in it. It's great. That's he turns into a bird at the end. They're like, the guy from Labyrinth turned into a bird and flew away.
Did he actually voice
it? He's not voicing a character, is he?
I don't know if they actually got him to do it or not, to be honest with you. They all sound relatively close. It's the kind of weird thing where I could see them actually being like, hey, could you just be yourself in this show?
Yeah. He's obviously done weirder stuff. I don't know. I guess, like, Marilyn Manson was the closest thing we got to, like, a... something like that in the last guy. Yeah, just like the like, you know, glam / shock rock, you know, super personality, yeah.
Which goes back to Alice Cooper.
Sure, yes we can always go down the rabbit hole and find the influence of the influence. So I don't know, I mean, besides Lady Gaga today, I can't think of anyone else who has a personality that makes their own brand.
Maybe it'll be like a singer getting away from a band.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be something like that.
That's true.
Like Freddie Mercury would probably have been huge too if he had still been alive all these years later.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, let's switch it back to comics. So, what? Chris.
Comics.
Actually, Lou, I think I would be remiss if I didn't give this one anecdote about David Bowie.
Okay, yeah. Let's have it.
Before we move on to comics. I was kind of teasing my wife today because her parents, back in 1983, had a romantic night at a David Bowie concert. In Hershey Park, Pennsylvania, which ultimately led to the conception.
That's great.
Kira Weller Brecker. She's probably mortified that I'm telling this story. You know, I can thank you know, David Bowie, because I don't, if you know, he wasn't performing that concert, I don't know if my wife would have come into existence. So there you go.
That's amazing. Awesome. That's
great.
That's
also another side note. Kira has everyone beat on first concert because hers was Nine Inch Nails and David Bowie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
At the Tweeter Center.
Wow.
When we were like 13, or maybe even younger than that.
That's right.
And when Bowie toured as support, I think, for Nine Inch Nails. Or maybe it was the other way around.
Didn't they alternate or something?
I think they could have easily.
I think they alternated at that time.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that album...
cool tour that would have been.
I almost went to that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I wasn't as into Bowie back then. I got more into Bowie recently.
Sure.
So did I, so but now, I like, remember that coming out. I remember liking it, and I re-listened to it a couple years ago, and there's good stuff, but I almost think it would have been better without Trent Reznor.
Do you mean the stuff they did together?
Yeah, the Earthling album.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Trent Reznor's stuff at that time, he had his hands in so many pies. This is what, maybe either between Downward Spiral and The Fragile, or right after The Fragile, and he was just producing.
I think it was before The Fragile.
Okay, so yeah, in between, because he had his writer's block or whatever. So, in between, he was producing all these albums. He did the Rob Halford Industrial album, which was called Two, which I bought.
Yeah, I remember that. Did he do Lost Highway? Wasn't that in that era?
That was Perfect Drug was Lost Highway. So, right. Yeah.
But he did didn't he do more for the soundtrack as Trent Reznor on Nine Inch Nails? Yeah. And then he produced the Bowie album. So, he had all these projects, and like it really just sounded like his album with whoever was singing
into it. He did all that stuff and got that out of his system. Then he made The Fragile, which was maybe he just needed to get all that like heavy super industrial shit out of his system. I don't know, because The Fragile is just a masterpiece, man. That's so cool.
Yeah, no argument there. I think the Bowie album would have been a little bit better without like the beats I thought some of the song ideas were strong, but didn't necessarily need like the like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's really good. All right, who can do the best belly? Not me. What do we got?
What was your first concert, Tim?
My first concert ever was the very last Ramon show in Philly. It was like 96. Yeah, I have a good first concert.
That's pretty nice, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and they walked right by me at the end.
Nice. That's.
I was like, well, there's that whole experience. Everything's downhill from there.
All right, how about you? First concert, James?
Went and saw my brother, myself, a couple friends, and my German exchange student went and saw Beck when he's doing the Odelay tour.
Oh, that's cool.
At, I don't know, it's called some other bank's name now on the Camden waterfront.
Tweeter Center.
Tweeter
Center. Called by its original name.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever you are now, by the time we air this, Camden, New Jersey Center.
Arena will be called something different.
Yeah, it'll be called the...
Guaranteed.
Oh, I bet it will, because it was Susquehanna Bank Center.
Just got BB&T.
And they just got bought out. Yep. So we're going to have probably, sixth name of the biggest Camden waterfront name arena.
Let's see
in
if
our
we
lifetime.
Can go. I'll go through the ones I remember. Tweeter Center is what it opened as.
Okay. No.
Sony E Center.
E Center before
Sony
Tweeter.
E Center is what it opened
E-Center,
as.
E Center. Yes.
Then it was the Tweeter Center.
Yeah.
Then there was a long time when I didn't step foot into that place.
It was one in between that and Susquehanna, at least one.
Yeah.
I just always called it Tweeter. So
Tweet me too. Yeah.
I can't help.
I think it must have been that for a little while.
It was. I think it was Tweeter probably the longest.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe during all the good Ozfests and stuff like that.
Man, I saw so many bands.
I saw a million Ozfests there.
So did I. Remember being in the pit on the lawn for Machine Head, and they were kicking up so much dirt I couldn't see a foot in front of me. I'm just like, oh, I got hit in the face. Oh, I'm bleeding. I guess I'll leave. This isn't for me. I've made bad decisions.
Mosh pits are funny these days, because I think everyone who, like us, who grew up in the time of moshing, sort of, I don't think it got passed down to the next, I mean, with maybe there's like some hardcore bands and like some metal bands who are always going to have it, but I've been to a few metal shows and over the past years, and the audience is aging a little bit, and mosh pits are a very sad place to be.
So it's almost like... oral tradition rather than people actually being initiated into the pit and seeing how it's properly done.
Just get in there, run around a little bit. Yeah, most likely everyone's going to be out of breath.
You
and,
hear about the mosh
the bar
pits of old
30
and
seconds.
Try to recreate them poorly. That,
exactly. It's like a Civil War reenactment. Like the Slayer pit of 98. But everyone's out of breath and just drinking beer. Just like a Civil War reenactment. So...
Well, that's a funny thing. Going to shows when you're older, you're at least speaking for myself, I'm more content to stand back, by the bar area, or maybe like
park in front of the soundboard, get the best stereo experience.
I'm short of stature. I always had a hard time kind of fighting for space in the crowd there. So in my adult life, I definitely enjoy being a little bit back by the bar area.
And you're closer to the bar.
But, sometimes when that one band comes around that you haven't seen since you were like a teenager or something, then you're definitely running up there and getting into the action for sure.
Yeah, it's. You need to a little bit, I think, and definitely varies band to band for me. But usually, I mean, tickets are so expensive now. Mm-hmm. If I'm at a concert, it's like one of my favorite bands. Like, otherwise, I'm just not there because, I mean, that's another sort of, I guess, downfall of the modern music industry is because money is hard to be made. Ticket prices are getting jacked up, which...
Yeah, but why not? Sports arenas are insane.
They are. It costs so much money to go to a sports game anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but sometimes it doesn't. I mean, you can still get 700-level seats on an off night for, a reasonable price.
You go to see the Sixers any night you want. Yeah. Hear a couple squeaks on the wood floor.
Yeah.
You know, drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, even if there's nobody in like a Philly venue like the Troc or the TLA, like the ticket's price is the ticket price. You know, you're not getting any breaks.
That's true. Has anyone been to the Fillmore yet?
Yes. I saw King Diamond at the Fillmore.
It was like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's a really cool venue. If anyone's in the Philadelphia area, the Fillmore is it's like a mid-sized venue, probably like maybe 1,500 to 2,500 it's
probably
seater.
Between the is it smaller than the Electric Factory?
It's at I feel like it's on par, okay. Like at least ballpark. So
I think they fit 2,000 in there, maybe.
Where's that
a
at?
A little more. It's right on Frankfurt and Delaware Ave.
Yeah. They're doing a lot of construction around there, so when we went to see that King Diamond show, we sort of had to like walk through a couple parking lots and around like, you know, a few construction holes or whatever.
Yeah, right on Frankfurt. That's yeah, been going on forever.
Yeah, it has. It has. It's across the street from the Sugar House on Delaware Avenue. Yeah.
But I mean, it's a beautiful venue and like it's really cool how it's set up and everything. Yeah, got no complaints about that. Oh, but I wanted to say, as far as being conceived to great concerts, a friend of mine and his wife conceived their kid on the 70,000 Tons of Metal Tour, which is a cruise that has 24/7 metal bands playing on it.
Whoa.
And it goes to the Caribbean and back.
So the 70,000 Tons of Metal is the boat.
Yes. And the fans.
And it just happens to be.
Maybe without the fans, it's only like 60,000 tons of
gotcha.
Metal. But,
yeah, they got that 24-hour buffet on them ships.
Oh, they got everything. it's really funny to hear. And I would love, one day I'm going to go on this, or play it maybe, hopefully. But just to see the metal bands from like Scandinavia, like, on a beach and just get it like wearing their armor
awesome.
In the sun. It's like
awesome.
A sight to see. All right. So you got a special comic book delivery recently, Chris.
I did.
Why don't you tell us about that?
We played a couple games at Commander like on Wednesday. Went pretty late. Jim had just given you the, I guess, these issues of Pathfinder to look through for the podcast that we did tonight. And then Bennett found a magic comic in his basement.
Oh, no, I found that comic. I was going
you
to the
found,
bathroom,
yeah.
And I found...
Where'd you find it, by the way? Were you, like, digging around in his basement? Or?
No, I just...
Hey, what are you doing, Luke?
Well, first of all, I went to the bathroom in the basement, and he says, there's a bathroom in the basement. Mm. Now, let me just be real clear and on the record. There was no bathroom in the basement.
There was a toilet
next to the washing machine in the basement. So... you know, like, there were no walls to obscure the stuff that was in the basement,
and I just
happened to see on a table...
While rooting through boxes and taking a piss.
You gotta do something, man. I drank a lot of beer. No, so, on the table was a Magic the Gathering comic, and not one of those new fancy plastic-wrapped ones, like... You know, this must have been like 90...
Ice Age. 94,
Ice Age, yeah.
95, something like that.
Something like that.
It looked like it had been folded up and put in someone's back pocket.
Yeah.
It had been through the ringer.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
So speaking in comic book grading terms, it had spine roll, it had creasing.
Oh, no.
It had discoloration and slight mold smell, or that is acidity.
Or sweet, sweet basement smell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Browning pages.
Yeah.
And technically, like, you avoided, like, the Seinfeld thing of it actually being in a bathroom because it's just a toilet down there. It's not a bathroom.
That's right.
So
it was not in the bathroom.
Passes inspection. Wasn't in the bathroom.
That's right. Technically, no one was in. The toilet wasn't in the bathroom.
Is basement grade better than bathroom grade? it was in the basement, though.
It was in the basement. It was found in whichever room gives me an extra decimal on the CGC rating. So... Yes, I brought it up and showed it to Chris.
Yeah, we all geeked out over it. And then we're about to leave and Bennett, like, shoves it in my in my bag. He's like, oh, yeah, I said Chris could have this. I'm like, no, you didn't. But anyway, so I brought it home, and I had a couple beers at dinner the next night, and then came home and just, you know, I read, there's a couple comic books out on my table, so I got into them, and then three drunken clicks on eBay later. Three drunken clicks and $15 on eBay later. And this morning, I get like a lot of 27 Magic comics that show up at my office. And one with like one was sealed. A couple of them were sealed in bags with the promo cards, and one of them's got a whole Fallen Angels pack in it, or Fallen Empires pack. Yeah. So I was like, yeah.
That's great.
This is the greatest drunken purchase I've ever made.
What you do is you muss them up and you put them back in Bennett's basement near the toilet.
And then the next time we're playing, you'd be like, Ben, did you know you had all these? Are you hoarding all this stuff, Ben?
This is, guys, this is just in time for April Fools, because, like, if you want to mess with people, you can just go on eBay, get a bunch of Magic comics from 1993, and just put them in people's basements.
And act like they've been Bogarting them all these years.
So, and tell them, if they don't know anything about Magic or comics, you can be like, this is worth a lot of money. Send them to their local comic book store at 30 North Main Street.
Damn it all. All
right, I won't finish
it. These are they're all Ice Age, right?
No, there's like four out of the five Ice Age ones. Not very many duplicates, so I get like a bunch of like decent amount of
get your money's worth.
Comics.
You might as well get the rest. I don't think there's, you know,
can't be too many more than that.
Not from back then.
No, they just do it every once and again. They do a mini.
There's like there's two Elder Dragon ones, the Legends guys.
Oh yeah.
And then there's a couple other good ones. There's a Nightmare comic.
All right.
Just got him on the front.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The best part about the comic I found was that Bennett had filled out the survey on the inside. Must have been when he was like, I don't know, 10? And it would like, and I thought...
Yeah, 10 or 11.
That was just like a flash for me of like what life was like before the internet. Like they just, filled out a survey. And I was like, well, this is like, you have to mail it. You have to
rip it
pay.
Out of the book.
You have to rip it out of the book and ruin your book. And then you have to like mail it. And all you're doing is like answering questions. And I guess the...
What kind of questions were they?
Like, what's your favorite comic? Like, how many times a week do you buy comics? Like, that kind of stuff. They're
was it
just
all about
doing...
comics, or was it about... It was about magic.
It was about magic and comics, and, like, magic comics. So, I guess it was just your general marketing research. The incentive to do this as a 10-year-old kid or whatever was someone would win, like, a poster. So, I guess that's how they made people do it. Was like,
Nightmare poster.
I'm wondering where that poster is now, if anyone ever actually got a poster, and if it's on eBay for, like, a lot of money.
Are you saying nobody got that poster? That it was a lie?
Conspiracy.
Maybe.
To collect all y'all data and give you nothing in return.
Yes, that's data mining of the 90s. We'll give you a poster. Just please send us this comic book page. Should we?
Yeah, why not?
We should...
Leander, get on that.
We'll just, we tell people every episode they can send stuff to our P.O. box, and we haven't seen anything in there yet.
Nope, not yet.
Also, we don't really have one.
Nope,
it's
we
like
don't.
Reverse mining.
Yes, we'll tell you our information. Wait, is it?
And then send us stuff, and then nothing ever comes in.
That's called a scheme, or a con, I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah, crime. That's what you're thinking of. That's what it was.
Info laundering.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about David Bowie. We talked about music. We talked about Magic Comics. Anyone else got anything? Burning.
For this minisode? No, I don't believe so. I'm saddened by Lemmy. I'm saddened by David Bowie.
Yeah, this was a shitty fucking month.
It's only January.
Yep, it's January 10th, and it's been a really bad...
What are the odds that we can make it all the way through the year without like some other major loss?
Oh, we could take bets.
We lost Chip Kelly, which wasn't a bad loss. So, it's an Eagles joke. I don't know if
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Chip Kelly.
What are you going to do if he does really good somewhere else? The Andy Reid's it to Kansas the worst, City.
Yeah, not to Kansas City. He'll go to Tennessee, I think.
Well, yeah, no, he won't go to Kansas City.
Yeah. But I could see that happening.
I like Kansas City.
I'm rooting for Andy Reid.
I'm rooting for Kansas City as well.
I never had a big problem with Andy Reid.
I like Alex Smith better.
That's they why kicked I'm the rooting. Shit out of the Texans the other day.
Football talk. They I like this. This is a rarity on the podcast. I love it. Well,
everybody's got a little football in them.
I live in South Philadelphia. Excuse me. And two blocks from my house, it's a little corner, old man bar, you would call it. Mm-hmm. It's actually a Kansas City Chiefs bar, believe it or not.
Really?
In the middle of South Philly.
Wow.
So I think now the Eagles are done, and the Chiefs are you know, rolling in the playoffs.
They're alive and kicking.
Mm-hmm.
I might be watching some games at Big Charlie's Saloon.
Oh, plug for Big Charlie's Saloon.
There it is.
South Philly. All right, so as a guy who doesn't really, not that big of a football fan, or really a football fan at all, so how long does a coach get before everyone's like, kick the bum out? Is it like a year? And if they don't win the championship, the guy gets fired?
Some of them get the boot in a year.
I think I heard somebody, because I listen to sports radio like all day long. That's like my, you know, it's different every day. Instead of like listening to, you know, the radio, I listen to some radio shows, like talk radio, but like, I mean, every day it's different. They're always talking about the same thing, but at least it's like different content-wise. Mm-hmm. So I heard a guy call in the other day, and he said he wouldn't be surprised if it comes out later that, like, or it may not ever come out, but this guy thought that Chip realized before, I guess right when he got, like, the GM and able to make trades and have final say over personnel and all that stuff, that he wasn't winning anything with this team. He was going to make every move he could to just make himself fail and be like, get me out of here. I'll go somewhere else and make it work. Like, he was like, I'm in too deep. The only way I can get out is if I get fired. So let's get the fire train rolling. And he bailed out. Because if you get fired, he was on a contract. If they let him go, they still owe him money.
Hmm. So he couldn't he was in a position. Now, I also don't know how sporting contracts work.
Yeah, of course.
But if true, is that their contracts are, they can't quit?
They'd can't have walk to, away? Right. Can't quit, but we got you for 5 years. Right. And if we part ways, we have to pay you unless you take another job elsewhere in the NFL.
Okay.
Right.
Or maybe another job, period. Like, I'm sure he couldn't go back to coaching in college and still get paid from the Eagles for them.
No,
cutting the contract.
The league,
yeah, but I mean, he was such an arrogant prick. I hated him the whole time. But he's got this thing like, you either do it my way or you don't play.
I remember
at
when
all.
He first came in, all the Philly fans were so
they loved
happy.
Him. Everybody loved
oh,
him.
Oh yeah.
Here's an issue. Do you guys think college players should get paid? Like college. What do you think about the college football scene, because there's a lot of buzz about that.
Yeah, there is. That's a big point when it comes to. I know guys get in trouble all the time for like trying to compensate college players with, because they can't pay them.
Right. I don't think they should.
No.
No. Because I think it'll just lead to more corrupt, horrible shit.
You're probably right.
So I think it should just be flat out no matter what.
And
just
you're still in school, and you're not professional. And if you're good enough, you will be a professional. So.
You can get paid when you get to the NFL when you aren't a complete fuck up.
Maybe they can earn a little bit off their jerseys that they sell, you know, to star player.
That would be fine. That would be fine.
I think so. I think, well,
you're getting a free ride. All those guys don't pay a dime for school.
I got a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you read Southern Bastards?
Oh, yeah.
Loves that book.
I love that book.
Now, Chris, that's a comic about a high school football town in Alabama.
Really?
Yep.
That's fantastic.
It is really good.
That's probably my favorite book out right now.
Yeah, when you asked me earlier about things I was reading recently, that's one that slipped my mind.
Yeah, Southern Bastards is pretty awesome.
And Jason Aaron is awesome. Writing it. He also wrote Scouts, which I also really like. and oh man, the artist, Jason Latour.
Latour, yeah,
yeah,
Latour.
He's You're right. He's incredible as well.
That book keeps getting better too. So they introduced the first story arc was like Earl Tubb, and who, well, spoiler alert, it's been a year. He gets killed. So
that's the one that I read. That's the only one that I read was that first arc.
Okay, it keeps getting better after that. So you know how they sort of they hint at the fact that like his daughter is gonna like come back to the town,
right? Because he's talking to her on the phone at the end.
It's been like 7 issues since that's come out, and she hasn't come back yet. But it's still great because now they're starting to go into every character from town and like do like a solo piece on them, and it's just some great stuff. So it's basically while it's still in there. It's basically like one-shots about these characters, mm-hmm. and everyone has been great. So definitely pick up the next 2 arcs of that, because that book's awesome. Jason Aaron is awesome.
He is. He's tearing it up, man.
Yeah.
His Thor stuff is good, too. He's really good. He's always been good.
I read, a while ago, I read a book that he did with Cameron Stewart. And I think I'm gonna say it was his first kind of, you know, his kind of book that he, you know, kind of coming out onto the scene, that he made a splash with. It's called The Other Side, and that's put out by Vertigo, and it was about the Vietnam War, and it kind of covers, you know, an American kid who was drafted into the Marines.
Okay.
But it also covers a Viet Cong soldier who's like, you know, same age, kind of conscripted into the, you know, the army.
Okay.
And it kind of that parallels like both their stories, and that was the first I heard of him. And I think after that was when he started developing like Scouts and all that. Okay. That's really great. The Other Side, recommend it.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I first heard of him on Scout. Yeah, he's great.
Is Scout still going on, or did that end?
That ended.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how long it ran.
It was a good long run, though. Like,
yeah, it had a decent... Some of my favorite stuff is the stuff that goes 50, 60 issues. It's like point A, B, C, D, and done. That's usually my favorite stuff.
Because all your greats are in there, like your Preacher.
Preacher, yeah.
I think that's what East of West is going to be. Have you read East of West at all?
No.
Oh, so good. That's my favorite book.
Yeah.
Right now, currently.
That's definitely my second favorite. That book.
I've seen it in the shop. It's like a... kind of supernatural western kind of thing, or
it's post-apocalyptic.
Oh, even better.
With and there's still we're 20 issues and we're still getting characters introduced. It's so dense.
Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
And you don't really even know. Sometimes I don't even really know what's going on. I just know I like it. Like the plot is so dense, it goes against everything. Like as a writer, you want to be doing.
It's
like,
Hickman. So.
It's just going so deep down the rabbit hole. As far as plot, but it's awesome all the time.
Cool. Check it out.
So, yeah, I recommend that one. That's another Image so book good. That's great. But I feel like that's going to end up being 60 issues.
Yeah.
Yeah,
books like that.
Yeah, books
it's,
that...
It's rare, like, books that go longer than that. Like Invincible, I really love. That's still going. Walking Dead's very good, even though, like, oh, hey, Walking Dead, everybody knows it. So what? It's still pretty good.
Oh, but like, Why the Last Man?
Why the Last Man? That's another example. That was another one. Yeah, sure.
Ex Machina. That's another Brian K. Vaughan book.
Mm-hmm.
I
feel like Saga's going to go on forever, though.
Saga. I'm behind on Saga.
Saga's like 30 issues in or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Is it still as good? I mean, it was one of the hottest books ever.
It's still very good. I catch a lot of crap when I say, like, East to West better. I don't know. And I'm like, well, screw you guys. I'm not just going to pick Saga. Like, I love Vaughn. I'm not just going to pick Saga, though.
I'm not the biggest fan of Saga, to tell you the truth.
It definitely has lulls, I feel.
It's a really... It's obviously well done. Just that it just doesn't grab me as much as... I don't know. Just, I know people love it, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't really...
I've only read the first trade of it, so I know I'm behind. But I feel it has a very, like, everyman appeal. Like, it's like a Star Wars.
It is very much like Star Wars, yes.
In that, like, everyone can like it, but is it the most, like, hard hit? It's not, like, to me, like, I love gritty stuff, yeah, East of too. Wet, Southern West, Southern Bastards.
Southern
That's
West.
The kind of stuff that really gets me, but, like, I got no problem with Saga, but I would probably always pick something more serious or, like, not even that's not serious, because there's a lot of, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, you know how Brian K. Vaughan is.
No idea, Lou, explain. No, I'm just kidding. I feel like Saga, the first two trades are really good, and then, like, the third and fourth one, I was a little bored, I'm not gonna lie, but, and the fifth one picked up, and, like, the next stuff that happens beyond the fifth one looks like it's set up to be amazing.
Because Vaughn does that, too. Vaughn yeah, definitely absolutely. Has, I felt that about Why about the Last Why. Man.
Yeah.
Started off, he always has great concepts and great endings.
Usually.
And then sometimes in the middle, he just sort of, it can flag. But, you know, still a great writer. Who saw Star Wars?
I did.
I did not.
Saw it.
Oh, we can't spoil it now.
Well, there it is.
I'm out.
Do you know any spoilins?
No.
We can't talk about
it's
it.
It's so pure and innocent.
All right.
Well, it was fucking terrible. No, just kidding. It was amazing.
It was good. It was definitely good.
It's one of those things that when you see it as a whole, like this new trilogy, it's probably going to get more points.
It'll probably be good. Disney's giving it the full Disney, as right. I like to say.
Yeah. So, I have heard that.
So do you guys know Disney owns Marvel now, too?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and that's another thing, speaking of money, kind of bringing it back to the record industry conversation we had earlier.
Whoa, full circle.
We have such a golden age of, like, nerd properties being made into, like, billion-dollar movies because they have the backing of Disney. They have
all the money in the world.
They have all the money in the world, and they can sort of be like, whatever we touch is gold. Will it last forever? No. But I think right now we're sort of seeing, like, the cinematic version of that where you can take what are the most beloved fan properties of all time. You got, you know, your Avengers over here. You got your Star Wars over here.
You just cherry pick them and dump a whole bunch of money into it.
Yeah.
And freak people out.
I am a little worried, though, that it's too much. And there's a bubble.
Are they slated to do
bigger and bigger?
Oh, there's certainly, I agree 100%. There's certainly a superhero movie bubble. And I think that's why, I think they're planning it out till, 2018, I think, is when one of the last Avengers movie is going to happen. Right. But what we have is 5 Star Wars movies slated to come out between now and 2020. So maybe they're like, they're also smart enough to, like, know these things. So they're probably going to shift it a little bit. So superheroes maybe have hit the peak. Also, actors are getting older. Iron Man's not going to be Iron Man forever.
Yeah, but, you know, superheroes, space opera, it's the same people going to see the movies, you know, it's that genre.
That's true.
It overlaps a lot.
It does overlap a lot, but that's why I think the money is there, because the core audience may get tired of Marvel movies and then want to see Star Wars movies. It's not like superhero movies are out, and the age of the indie family film is coming, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they're going to keep it in the same vein.
Yeah. We're not going to see, you know, billion-dollar documentaries or anything. It's still targeting the same people, but by the time they burn out of superheroes, we're going to have Star Wars. And by the time they burn out of that, Disney's going to own whatever property comes next, so. Yeah, that's how I see it.
I think the film industry in general needs to do better. Because I feel like the reason these superhero movies are always on top is because nothing else is really trying as hard. I know they have the budgets, but, like, indie Sundance films do great.
Point Break remake. I mean, that says it all right there.
Everything remake. Everything 80s is getting remade. All the 90s is on the table.
Why do you
it's
have
all
to
happening.
Ruin a good movie by remaking it?
Because the one guy on Earth who loves Point Break more than Lou is the guy that is probably going to make
financing
this movie.
Financing the
project. You're right. No, that's not how it happened. How it happened was, oh, we're all out of ideas. What can we buy?
I feel your pain. I was very upset when RoboCop got remade, because that's probably my favorite 80s movie.
Right.
So I feel your pain for this Point Break movie.
But can we say, can we really say this is the studio's fault? This is just people. People don't want to see, you know, they don't want to see Oscar bait movies. They don't want to see indie stuff. You know, a lot of them want to see Wes Anderson movies, and that's, even that's such a small percentage of people. You know, that's, they just know what people want.
Well, yeah, but how many, like, I mean, how many action, thriller, adventure movies are there that aren't, you know, a remake? You know, there's, I think they're doing it, you know, the people that greenlight these movies, the, you know, the producers, the executives are, you know, they're going to the superheroes and they're going to the older properties because, you know, you don't have to invest in something, you know, the material's already there. It's
right. So it's, you're hedging your bets sort of in a way, right? You're saying it's the familiarity you're buying. And you say people are going to see this because they know it. But there's still hundreds of movies, maybe 100 movies released each year, and that do hit the theaters and people don't go to see them. I mean, that could be because they're not advertised heavily enough.
It could also be the thing where you put, you know, you put some music on at a party and you walk away from it. And within 5 minutes, there's someone trying to yank the cord out of your phone because they don't know this song. Like, yeah. I don't know this song. I want to listen to the song that I like.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, how do you know that you don't like this one? Like, you got to give it a chance. How are you ever going to like something new if you don't sit down and check it out? And like, I don't know. I always have that problem. See, where, trying to put music on at a party where it's always the girls.
Always trying to take that, ladies.
To rip that Damn. Cord out of your phone and put, like, you know, I don't know, just put some garbage on that they want to hear.
I think you're 100% right, but I think most music can be found for free, like Spotify and avenues through that, where your movie ticket is like a $20, $30, $40 endeavor. That's so it's true, like, well, too. I guess I better save that money for
it's
the blockbuster.
It's not cheap to go to a movie on a whim and say, hey, you know, if I like it, I like it. If I don't, I'm okay with blowing $40 and sitting in there for 2 hours.
For sure. You know, you can always bring granola bars, though. That'll cut down on your costs.
Ooh, well, granola.
I did this the other day. I saw Joy in Brooklyn with Allie, and I got a new coat, and I fit 3 beers in the coat, and she fit 1 beer in her purse. And
go, girl.
And then we saved some money that way, and it was cool. But I got to tell you about the theater. It's called the Nighthawk. It's in Brooklyn. They played Pulp Fiction yesterday at noon, and tickets were sold out the night before, and I was really bummed about that because we were trying to see Pulp Fiction for breakfast, and they serve beer there, so you can go in at 11 a.m., get sauced, and watch Pulp Fiction on the big screen. Like, that's pretty cool.
That is
fantastic.
Cool. So, one reboot that I can get down with, though, the X-Files are coming back in like 2 weeks.
Well, that's a television reboot, right?
Yeah.
Television knows what it's doing right now.
Seems to.
I have faith that X-Files reboot is going to be very
good. I think it's going to be excellent.
I'm excited for it, and I never really watched X-Files the first time.
I was all in. I was all in on X-Files, man.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Sunday nights, getting creeped out in my bed, watching till like 10 o'clock. Yeah. Oh man!
I used to call my friend and like talk about the episode after it was over.
Oh yeah,
we were real into it.
Yeah, I was all in.
A friend of mine, we used to make bets. We used to make money bets about what would happen in season finales.
That's a problem, Luke.
Yeah, because we were in what, fourth grade, and it was like cigarette. It's gonna be it was the cigarette smoking man and Deep Throat and the black guy. And when the black guy came on, you remember that guy? You know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
and then Krychek.
When he came on,
was after that.
Yeah, it's
fucking
you always had one more level. So we were like, who's it going to be at the end of this season? Oh, that was so good. X-Files were really good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited for that to come back, definitely.
Now that's on Netflix, right? The original series.
Yeah, they are. And they're like, they're redone in HD too. So they look like, they look, it's so weird because I think like this time last year, we went through and watched a lot of it, like, from the beginning. And it was right when they had, like, some announcement, like, oh, we've re-released the, because I think Chris Carter shot the thing on film or in like, the widescreen format, I think, because he had the, I guess he just had the wherewithal to be like, you know, everything's going to be widescreen one day, so right. let's just do it right from the beginning. And so it's not, I guess, every original episode you saw was pan scanned, where they would take the full screen shot and crop it to show the action.
Okay.
And then now that they have the ability and that everyone has a TV that's in that format, they went back and redid it, and everything's in HD and everything is widescreen because they did it like that from the beginning.
That's cool.
And I remember the first, like, two seasons that we watched were upgraded, and then we went to the next one, and it was like letterbox, and it just like, it was like 4x3, and it just looked like shit. But they hold up pretty well, I gotta say. Like, everything's old because it's 15 some years ago, but yeah, I mean, they hold up pretty good.
And another thing I noticed is that practical effects seem to... Yeah,
I guess it's 20 years. I guess 25. It's 20 years old.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Practical effects seem to hold up pretty well in HD. Early CGI does not.
No.
Like, when you're watching early CGI, you're like, oh, that's bad.
Yeah,
you can
right.
even tell blue and green screen scenes and some stuff. You're like, right. wow, that's really obvious.
Phantom Menace.
I'm proud to say I haven't rewatched that since HD came out. But the special edition Star Wars trilogy stuff and just some other movies that I've seen lately, I've just noticed that's, you know, those are really telltale signs. Whereas the practical effects look good, you know, like, well, it was really there. It was a puppet or something.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. That's the way they used to do it. You put a guy on a wire and drag him through the room and then erase the wire frame by frame.
Yep. Hey, give me the latex Muppet every time. Or
yep.
You know what? I saw something on the new X-Files that they're doing, and they have a guy in a full... like reptile suit, and
yep.
they were just like, we're not gonna make, and I think they did the suit like piece by piece, so it's almost like armor, and then they just painted like his fingers and his face
good.
And stuff like that,
because that's
didn't
how they
have
did
to
they,
make him go
they couldn't
through.
Go to CGI now it
no.
would be ridiculous if X-Files was like
no.
I'm sure they did it in the movie or whatever, or one of the two, because there were two movies. I didn't
two
see
movies.
The second movie.
I don't think I did either. That's
but they get bigger budgets in general.
Yeah, but I would think that they wouldn't be like, okay, now's the time to make everything in X-Files CGI. And
no.
like, TV is getting so smart. They're getting smart the same way Disney and Marvel is getting smart, but for a different audience.
Yeah.
That's because Disney and Marvel owns ABC, so there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody owns something, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, Disney owns pretty much everything.
I don't know. Disney owns me.
I think they do, technically.
I think so.
You're fired, Tim. Oh boy.
That's fine.
All right. Well, we've been at this for a while.
I feel like this is not a mini-minisode. I feel like it's been
a special edition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mic's still running, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good.
All right. Sign us off, Lou. All
right. So, David Bowie died.
God damn it.
I'm going to bring it down.
Hmm.
So
full circle.
Just go listen to Station to Station.
Yep, that's it. Go listen to Station to Station, and we'll see you next time.